Okay, sounds like we're good to go. Go ahead, Don.
Okay, so like I said, the closet is another original feature to the house with the built-ins and the cabinets above. Here's the hallway going up. Here's the screen door to that bedroom we're just in. The hallway goes down. Bathroom here. Bedroom, bedroom, bedroom. One, two, three. Actually, it's five bedrooms upstairs, not four. I was mistaken. I forgot. The third bedroom, again, has original casement windows. This one has corner shelving built into it. And again, has a similar closet as the other one. And original glass knobs on all the doors on this floor. The bathroom, I think it's been remodeled. I don't think it's 1929, but the owner said in 67, all this tile work was already in place. So, but I think it's a little too early for 29. So I'm thinking sometime either in the 50s or probably in the 50s, they redid it. Down beyond the bathroom is another bedroom, again, cross-ventilated, casement windows, all original. And then the final bedroom is used as an office space. And again, it has its original windows also, original doors. Here you see, looking back, it also has the same kind of closet. Here's the door going into it. And it also has a pendant ceiling light with a painted globe. And that's the house. Very, very much intact. Impressive how high the integrity is in the house. And I'm nominated to both registers at the local level under criteria C. And that's it.
Thank you, Don. You have any questions or comments for Don?
Oh, I should just mention too, Dr. Rapoon has a rather interesting life. He was born in Nice, France, and got his medical training in Munich and then in Vienna. When World War I broke out, he was practicing medicine in the Ural Mountains. And of course, not only did World War I break out, but a couple of years later, the Russian Revolution happened. And the communists overran the town he was in. So he had to get out of the town and he moved to the town of Omsk, O-M-S-K, which was the capital of Western Siberia. And there he started working for the American Red Cross. This town eventually was also overrun by the revolutionaries, and he and his family had to make a 3,000-mile overland trip to Vladivostok on the east coast of Russia. And there he also worked for the American Red Cross, and he met Dr. Jackson, who was from Honolulu. And Dr. Jackson set it up so that him and his family could migrate to Hawaii. And that's how Dr. Osorio got to Hawaii. When he was here, he worked as a private practice, and he also worked for the Territorial Department of Health. And in 1937, he had an auto accident, which left him as an invalid, and he died in 1940. His widow continued to live in the house till 1963. And then for around 4 years, the house was rented out. The present owner said, "It must have been a very interesting house at that time, because after we moved in, sometimes we'd wake up and go down and there'd be someone sleeping on the couch in the living room." That said, people would just wander in not knowing that the house had been sold. And so that was very interesting. But the present owner has been there since 67 and very much has kept the house intact.
I was glad you explained the concrete base with the lava rock on top, because that was very curious to me to have that heavier looking stonework on, you know, above the other. But thinking about trellis, thinking about vines like that makes a lot of sense. And I'm very sorry, you brought us several really fascinating properties today, as you always do, and it's very meticulous, and it is very painful not to be able to do site visits and see see these properties and be able to explore them. But you're giving us a lot of pictures, which is a small consolation.
Perhaps when we can do that again, the owners might be more than willing to let you come view it. I think so. And I was surprised this time. I thought the houses were very exceptional houses this time. And I was really happy and amazed.
Okay, any other questions for Don? Okay, somebody like to make a motion?
I'll do it. I move that we place the Raccoon residents on the Hawaii State Register of Historic Places under criterion C, is that right?
Yes.
And recommend it for listing in the National Register of Historic Places.
Thank you, Paul. Any second?
I'll second that. Again. Oops.
Oh, wow.
Who's first? Pat. We'll give it to Pat.
Yeah, we'll give it to Pat. Yay, Pat. Great. Okay. Any other discussion? Yeah, another wonderful property. Thank you, Don. Okay.
Thank you all very much.
Have a vote, please, all in favor of placing this on the State Register and recommending to National. Looks like it's unanimous.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Don. Okay, we have one more property. Just wanted to make sure everybody's okay with sort of charging through that. If anybody would like a quick break, then just raise your hand right now. Okay, we'll just go forward with the Kealia Avenue residents. Is that Angie or?
Yes, that's me.
Okay, thank you.
There we go. Can you guys see it? Hello?
Can't see it yet.
Oh, okay, hold on. Let me try again. Can you see it now?
Yes.
Okay, I can't get at my... Here we go. There we are. All right. All right, this is 3035 Kealia Avenue. The house at 3035 Kealia Avenue is a 1.5-story single family residence located at the foot of Leahi Crater in the historic neighborhood of Diamond Head Terrace. It's an example of a builder's bungalow with Tudor Revival decorative details. Local construction adaptations address both available materials and the tropical climate. The architect, if any, is unknown, as to is the contractor, but the house exhibits the vocabulary popular in the 20s and 30s and the eclecticism of Diamond Head Terrace subdivision. As I said, the home is located in Diamond Head Terrace near the southwestern end on a 4,200 square foot parcel. Consisting of 73 lots, the Diamond Head Terrace tract was developed in 1921 by the Henry Waterhouse Trust Company. As a sales incentive, Hartwood was hired by the developer to develop four unique bungalows that would be lovely and inexpensive, catering to young families. In a 1922 article, Wood said he preferred to call this subdivision Honeymoon Village. And that's the lot right there. Kealia Avenue, formerly Croton Avenue, the name was changed in 1926, is located at, the southern end of the original Diamond Head Terrace, one block north of the eastern end of Kalakaua Avenue. The neighborhood developed relatively slowly, well into the 1930s, given its desirable neighborhood and proximity to the ocean. The lot number is 52 on early subdivision maps, and most of the tracts were similar dimensions and were often advertised for sale with the note that it was possible to divide the lot, as this one was done sometime after its initial purchase in 1927 and the sale of the subsequent house that was built in 1928. In this 1921 advertisement for the home sites, Diamond Head Terrace was touted as a splendid investment with wide streets near the beach and car line and a desirable remoteness from the congested districts. Diamond Head Terrace lots were typically developed by the owners and their architects or builders, resulting in a variety of architectural styles. A 1926 newspaper article noted builders seem to have gone out of their way to design homes with personality. A testament to the architectural excellence in this neighborhood is that at least 23 houses in the Diamond Head Terrace subdivision are now listed on the National Register, representing at least 12 distinct architectural styles. By April of 1926, advertisements by Pacific Trust Company were saying there were only a few lots left for purchase, and by June, all lot advertisements in the newspaper had ceased, with only home sales listed thereafter. So for lot 52, in 1927, Rudolph Buckley bought three lots, 12, 13, and 52, from Pacific Trust Company for approximately $19,000. In 1927, same year, Buckley obtained a building permit for lot 52 valued at $3,850. This is believed to have been for the house construction, although no real records were located. And as I previously said, we couldn't find any information identifying an architect or a building contractor. An interesting side note is this: Mr. Buckley changed his name from Buckley, however you say it. I should know, I took lots of German. Saying it sounded too German and that he was an American. Shortly after that, he joined the American Red Cross and went to Siberia to help starving and displaced refugees, making national news for his efforts. He resigned as a cashier at the Bank of Hawaii when he left for Siberia, but was made a vice president on his return. Later, he became a prominent Honolulu insurance agent and investor, buying many real estate tracts all around Honolulu. And he and his wife were very active in Honolulu society, and especially in music and theater. Around the same time Mr. Buckley purchased the Kieli lot, he came to local prominence for purchasing a Stradivarius violin made in 1695. He named the violin the Hawaiian Strad and performed publicly numerous times with the instrument. In 1928, the now subdivided parcel and new home was sold to Lieutenant and Mrs. William Kanekanui. Lieutenant Kanekanui grew up in Waikiki and was a graduate of Punahou School and later Annapolis Naval Academy, where he was on the swim team. Kanekanui's friend and next door neighbor growing up was Duke Hanamoku. After a long career in the Navy, including being actively under attack on the ship Ogallala during the 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor, Kanekanui achieved the rank of commander. After leaving the military, he became president of the Tuna Boat Owners Association and entered local politics. The Kanekanuis sold the Kieli home in 1949 to William Sturgis, a local publisher who lived there only for a short time until it was sold to Ivan Palmer and his wife Leonor in 1950. The home remained in the Palmer family until its recent sale. Okay, let's see. The house at 3035 Kieli Avenue is, like I said, 1.5-story single family residence completed in 1928. The home is clad in horizontal lapped boards that flare slightly at the base. The wood frame structure has both front and side gable roofs and hip roofs with exposed rafter tails. The front facade is notable for the projecting storybook asymmetrical entry element that features a rounded arched door and window, both original. And the original windows along the front facade are outset casements with simple trim. Shed roof dormers are located on the front and rear facing roofs. The maid's quarters, a 1940 addition, can be seen at the right with that door off the hip roof there. And the partial second story attic loft space was added in 1941. You could also note that the patio paving back here matches that at the front stoop, and those are also original. The single car carport attached along the southeastern side of the residence is also a 1940s addition. The steps lead to a second level roof deck and provide the only access to the second story loft. And this is a picture of the stairs into the loft area and the deck on top of the carport. The interior has undergone kitchen and bath renovations, but the original plan and many finished details remain, including most original doors and windows, which are in keeping with the cottage aesthetic. The dining room space is a lowered concrete slab with the same pattern as the exterior patio area, but it's painted green. The screen double French doors that we saw in the rear view with the matching screened side lights occupy most of the exterior wall. You can sort of see it over here in the corner. They were boarded up because they were just screened at the time these pictures were taken. The kitchen, not sure if it's original. It very well could be if you notice the cabinets, but it is going to be remodeled. It has access to the living room, the dining room, a small pantry, and the laundry room. And through the laundry room, you also have access to the 1940 maid's quarters. The residence is significant at the local level under Criterion A, as one of the plots developed in the 1920s as part of the Diamond Head Terrace subdivision. The residence retains its historic integrity and is also eligible under Criterion C for its architecture as a modest builder bungalow of the period. The bungalow style with Tudor influences is in keeping with many residents of historic Diamond Head Terrace and others throughout Honolulu. The residence retains its historic integrity, location and setting, and the surrounding residential built environment have all been retained. Diamond Head Terrace is the location of many historic residences, as I said, and the layouts of streets has remained as originally conceived. The design, materials, and workmanship of the home are intact. The attic and rear additions were added in the 1940s, so it achieved this 50-year benchmark themselves. The home is currently undergoing some needed renovations. The bath and kitchen will be modernized, but the original floor plans, windows and doors, wall and ceiling details are being retained throughout, maintaining a high level of historic integrity on the interior as well. Jalousie windows that you could see up on the loft addition will be replaced with historically accurate windows. The feeling and association of the property are retained, with the home still expressing its historic sense of place and time of construction, and is an asset to the historic Diamond Head Terrace neighborhood. And that's it.
Thank you, Angie. Okay, any questions or comments for Angie?
Just want to say you did a wonderful job, Angie. It's nicely described and interesting in every way, and great little property.
Thank you.
Wish I owned it.
It's, I know, it's just adorable. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. Was it go for $2 million?
I don't know exactly, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I just had a, oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Paul.
I just had a quick general question for Angie or Bill, the pedant. So what are touches of Tudor? I always thought the half timber was the big marker for Tudor, but obviously there's something else.
It's the metric porch is one, right, Angie?
Right, yeah, the storybook porch and the asymmetry, the lap siding, it doesn't have, I researched this quite a bit, and I'm sure Don, you know more than I do, but half timbering is the most common identifier of, of Tudor, but it's not the be all and end all. And this definitely fell within the Tudor category.
Okay. Thank you.
I would agree with it. I would agree with the Tudor. There are a lot of houses all through other parts of the country. They sometimes were wood, sometimes there's some over in Manoa that are wood with this asymmetrical porch. That's kind of a signature thing. This porch with a little sort of, you know, one roof longer than the other, almost like a shed. That's a real signature element. Sometimes in the mainland, they often have a chimney on the front too.
Yeah, and the houses without the half timbering primarily came in the 30s, very late 20s. Before that, usually it'll half timbering be more common. But during that period, they stripped it down. And actually, with the skewed gable entryways, it's just a more playful form.
Right. And this, I did some research, but I couldn't really make a connection. But this sort of storybook playful style was very popular in Los Angeles about this same time. So it may have been gotten some influences from that too.
Great, thank you.
I wanted to ask if you know when the roofing was replaced. On Kauai, we lost so many roofs in Hurricane Iniki that I'm used to seeing those kind of curved valleys where without the more traditional copper gutters. I notice it here, and I was just wondering about what the original roof would have been, or if you know when this was replaced.
I don't know what the original roof was, but we're assuming that it was a wood shake, and the owner is going to replace this roof with a wood shake or shingle. I'm not sure which.
Shingle, I hope.
Yeah. Barbara, you're on here, right? Barbara?
Hi. Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Actually, the original roof is a cedar shingle. It's still there. It's under the asphalt shingles. So we're going to be removing and replacing it. It's worn. It was oversheathed with the asphalt shingles because it was deteriorated. But we're going back with tight, short exposure, 4-inch, 3.5 to 4-inch cedar. It's going to look really nice.
I'm sure it will. Yeah, our house is 1936. And when we moved in, there was actually an aluminum. They were big plated aluminum that several houses in the neighborhood had. But it was placed over the original cedar rather than ripping it up and doing plywood or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that'll be a lovely change to the house.
Mm-hmm. I had exactly the same thing. And one thing I discovered too late, because I had already committed to the shingles, was that it was an irregular pattern shingle with a wave in it, and it was in green. And I wished I'd known that before I had made my decision. But... So look at it carefully.
Will do.
Any other questions for Angie? Somebody like to make a motion?
I move that the property at 3035 Kile Avenue, Kilei, how do you pronounce it?
Kile
Avenue be placed on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criterion A and C. Is that right, Angie? A
yes.
And C?
Yes.
And that if the owner chooses to, that it go on to be listed, recommended for listing in the National Register.
And they do. They want it to go to National also.
Under the same criteria.
Yes.
Seconded.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote, please. Angie, can you unchair?
Unchair, yes.
Thank you. Okay, all in favor of placing this on the State Register recommending it to National. Looks like it is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Congratulations. Thanks, Angie. Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay, I'm going to suggest we just take a 5-minute break and then we can finish up with the board business. So everyone be back at 2:10.
No.
Is Alton back yet?
I've been here all along. It's just that my name doesn't show up.
That keeps throwing me off. I haven't memorized your new name yet. Okay, thank you, Alton. Okay, I think that we can move forward. I think first item up for business is we would like to have a vice chair nomination. So I guess we need to ask, is anybody here interested in being vice chair? Anybody willing to be vice chair?
It's a catchy title too.
It is.
It has a double entendre, right? Vice chair. I was once vice chair for student affairs, which I thought was even better.
You got so much experience, Bill. How about yourself?
Oh, no, I've done it before. I've done it. I want to share the wealth. I was chair and vice chair. I'd like to share the wealth.
So you got experience. You got a lot of good.
Here I called you up to help you get in the meeting, and you're doing that to me.
Yeah. If I may.
Yes, please.
Obviously, this is a strictly an internal board matter. However, I do need to point out that in the absence of the chair, if there is no vice chair, it will not be possible to do a meeting. We can't do this on the fly because there has to be somebody to preside over the meeting.
And I haven't missed one yet, but you never know.
No,
I'll share. I'm willing to serve if you want me to.
Thank you,
just
Bill.
Because I know the ropes a little bit. It makes it easier for the rest of you.
Okay. I think we probably need to do an official nomination. Somebody nominate Bill Chapman.
I nominate Bill Chapman as vice chair of the Historic Places Review Board.
Second. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Pat.
Okay. Any discussion or objection from anyone except for Bill?
Excellent choice.
Okay, all in favor.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you all for your vote of confidence.
Unanimous, thank you. Okay, and then next, we'd like to have a motion to have a limited meeting on November 18th for reasons of privacy, safety, access, and liability. Somebody would like to make a motion for that?
I move that we have a limited meeting for the next meeting for reasons of safety, privacy. Liability, and privacy.
Thank you, Matt. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Alton beat me.
Alton, thank you. Okay, any discussion or objections? All in favor? Okay, goes forward. Meeting dates. So our next meeting, the limited meeting will be on November 18th. The actual meeting will be on November 19th. I mean, we'll see what happens between now and then, whether we'll be in person or we'll have site visits and so forth. And then Dr. Downey, you said there was probably I think you said there was maybe six nominations.
As of right now, we have five.
Five, okay. And that's including the two that we had to defer from tomorrow.
Correct.
Okay. Any other business, Dr. Downer?
No, I mean, I will say in terms of the limited meeting and the next meeting, the governor, even as we speak, the governor is having a press conference to announce the latest amendment to his emergency proclamation. We haven't seen it yet. Obviously with the recent spike in numbers, I think it would be a while yet before he does away with the restrictions on public, on, you know, face-to-face meetings. Whether that runs, you know, whether that will be resolved by November is, I think, as much as anything due to the, you know, will be reflected in what the number of total numbers are. There was initially some hope that the spike was a result of July 4th festivities. I think it's pretty clearly not that. And as we creep towards 70% total vaccination rate, very, very slowly, we get to the mid 50s very quickly. But something else is going on. I'm not saying don't count on the limited meeting or face-to-face meeting anytime soon, but I do think that I think it's very possible that we will be, that this is very much what the new normal is going to look like for quite a while.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any comments or questions? Okay, I'd like to adjourn the meeting and we'll see you guys all again in November.
All right.
Thank you.
Mahalo, everybody. Ahui ho.
Ahui ho.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye, till next time.